Greetings, and welcome to Activist News, a bi-weekly multimedia activist news program. News provided by people involved in making news by organizing for social change. The following information challenges the corporate media's coverage of events. In today's program, we look at Palestine under occupation, the Bush administration's latest demands on the Palestinian people, and the impact on the continuing Israeli offensive. Then we talk about the growing opposition to the USA Patriot Act, the new laws and policies designed to repress political dissent. And we'll hear about the case of one of the thousands of Arab and Muslim Americans being held in detention centers across the United States by the FBI. Finally, we have an update on the continuing support for the most famous man on death row, journalist and activist Mumia Abu-Jamal. President Bush has told the Palestinian people that they must replace their elected leadership. This while the Israeli military offensive continues to escalate in occupied lands. The corporate media downplays this widening military assault. Sarah Flounders, co-director of the International Action Center, has traveled to Palestine to get the real story. She was part of the delegation from the Answer Coalition. She has the following report.
Let's remember that President Bush is a president not elected by popular vote. He was selected by an appointed body, the U.S. Supreme Court. This month, he announced his new peace policy. Yasser Arafat must go. Palestinian President Yasser Arafat was elected by 87% of the popular vote. Bush has demanded that all Palestinian political and economic institutions be reorganized to meet U.S. government approval. As he made a new round of dire threats against Iran and Syria, intensified war preparations on Iraq, Bush has endorsed Israeli Prime Minister Ariel Sharon as a man of peace. All of this reads as a resounding endorsement of Israel's escalating offensive of all Palestinian towns and villages. There are over 2 million Palestinian people on the West Bank confined to their homes in a 24-hour shoot-to-kill curfew. This is apartheid, an Israeli policy of occupation, isolation, and military lockdown. Unemployment is now 65% to 70% in occupied Palestine. Basic infrastructure has been destroyed. This is a military occupation paid for with U.S. tax dollars. Over $15 million a day of our tax dollars every day of the year goes to the state of Israel. These U.S. funds pay for Israel's tanks, Apache attack helicopters, the ammunition, and it heavily subsidizes hundreds of Israeli settlements, illegal settlements on Palestinian land. U.S. aid to Israel is also a big subsidy to the largest U.S. corporations. Over 60% of U.S. aid to Israel goes directly to U.S. corporations, like Boeing, Lockheed Martin, General Electric, Honeywell, to pay for Israel's military hardware. This is an interview by Richard Becker and attorney Carl Massinio, part of the delegation sent by the International Answer Coalition.
We're up here close to the checkpoint between Deir al-Bala and Khan Yunis, and there's a wall that's been built by the Israeli army. On one side of the wall is a road that the Israeli settlers can use, and they can travel without any impediment, no delays at all. And then, if you look over on this side of the road, you can see that there are hundreds of vehicles here, both passenger vehicles and taxis, as well as commercial vehicles, which are backed up waiting for many, many hours. And this is a huge, huge problem deliberately created for the people here. It's an economic problem, it's a problem of time, it's a medical problem, and it's intentionally created by the Israelis as a form of harassment of the Palestinians. How many people live in the camp?
In the camp about 13,000, but the refugees in Jenin district about 55,000.
55,000?
About 25% of the inhabitants in Jenin district.
And how many people are living in Jenin camp now?
After the invasion?
After the invasion.
And now only about 8,000.
So 5,000 people have been forced out.
Yes, they are homeless.
We have 55 bodies, is killed, but we cannot know exactly how many people is killed. The soldiers, Israeli soldiers, is killing.
It is claimed that 90 persons are killed here. And at the beginning, they told the world that perhaps hundreds of persons were killed here in Jenin camp. When we entered the camp after they withdrew from it, we found many families are under the demolished houses. They were fortunately alive. So only 55 persons were buried. The majority of them were civilians. About 17 were fighters, and the rest are women, children, old men above 60 years old, and some of them were handicapped persons and disabled persons. There, in front of that demolished house, there was a disabled man that was buried with a building, and his family cried for soldiers to give him out of their house. They refused, and till now they don't know anything about his body. 270 tanks, 270 tanks, about 25,000 soldiers, helicopters. She was living here in this house. There were 18 persons. When the Israelis bombed the house and then the tanks began to demolish the house, they go downstairs here in another apartment, and their neighbors joined them. Totally, they were about 30 persons. They succeeded to make a small hole. Through it, they escaped away from the tanks and the bulldozers. That was killed by the Israelis yesterday, and this is a march for him. Here, kindergarten, it was shot also. And the yard was demolished here. People here, it took them 50 years to build such houses. Yani all of the family were working and making money to build, and everything was finished. The inhabitants in the camp decided to rebuild the camp in the same position.
My name is Peta Lindsay, and I'm an activist from D.C. I just turned 18 years old, and I'm here today reporting from the demonstration that began at 9th Street and Pennsylvania Avenue, where the FBI building and the Justice Department can be located, in order to fight the recent rollbacks in civil rights and civil liberties that have taken place in this country since the Bush administration began its racist attacks at home and abroad after September 11th. Today, hundreds of people have gathered from all over the East Coast, from New York, from Boston, Philadelphia, in order to say no to Ashcroft, no to Bush, and no to their racist policies. We stand here in solidarity with our brothers and sisters from Palestine, with our brothers and sisters of the Muslim and Arab community, who since September 11th have been demonized and subjected to all sorts of scrutiny for no other reason than their ethnicity, than their religion, than their country of origin. And so we're here today to fight that sort of racist policy, to fight that sort of targeting, and to stand up and say no. No to their attempts to divide us, no to their attempts to frighten us, and no to their attempts to keep us silent. We're here at the demonstration with Mara Verheyden-Hilliard from the Partnership for Civil Justice, longtime activist and civil rights attorney.
Well, today we've had a demonstration in Washington, D.C., started outside of the Department of Justice and the FBI, and it's a mass gathering of people who are opposing the Bush administration's new efforts to roll back civil rights and civil liberties in the United States. Since September 11th, the Bush administration has jammed through an agenda that was really a pre-existing agenda, an agenda that existed long before September 11th, that is an agenda of the ultra-right, and it includes a vicious crackdown on and taking away hard-fought civil rights and civil liberties in the U.S. They've, for example, passed through the Patriot Act. They have that legislation ready to go within days after September 11th. It's a 300-plus document that has really draconian restrictions on people's rights, that authorizes allowing the government to conduct secret searches of our homes and offices. It authorizes the government to go in and read our email, to look at the types of websites that we're looking at. It authorizes the government, it allows Attorney General John Ashcroft to determine that he is going to hold a non-citizen in prison at his discretion. Since then, there have been additional restrictions that the government has put into place. Ashcroft has authorized himself to overturn any INS judge's order that would order the release of one of those citizens that the Bush administration has detained. And most recently, the Bush administration has announced that George Bush has the right, at his sole designation, to take any citizen of the United States, put that citizen in prison for the rest of their lives, never let them have a trial, never charge them with any crime, never let them see an attorney. Well, since September 11th, a lot of these new measures have been implemented by basically using racism and demonization of the Arab, South Asian, Muslim community. The government has gone out and suggested that all these folks in the United States are terrorists, that they have the right to sweep them off the street. They put more than 1,200 people in prison. People were in prison and their families didn't know where they were. There wasn't any clarity that they'd seen attorneys. To this day, the government is refusing to announce who they've got in prison, what they've charged them with, whether they've seen attorneys, or to identify who the people are, even though they've been sued by my organization and others to release this information. And having implemented this type of new repressive mechanism, and basically by going after this group of people in the United States, now the government is extending it to political activists. At the end of May, Attorney General John Ashcroft announced that he was going to revoke and repeal the Attorney General guidelines that were put into place after abuses from COINTELPRO, from the government's program against the people of the United States, against social justice groups in the United States, was revealed. There were guidelines put into place to restrict this kind of activity. Attorney General John Ashcroft now says it's open season on political and religious entities and people in the U.S., and that he's authorizing the FBI to investigate people purely based on political activity and religious activity.
And that kind of legislation is what we're here to fight. Do you have a website in case anyone wants more information?
The website of my organization is www.civil-rights.net.
And also you should check out www.internationalanswer.org.
It seems that the persecution of Palestinians is not limited to just the Middle East. Here in the United States, a Boston case exemplifies the extent to which Ashcroft's Justice Department is willing to go when a Palestinian man living in Boston was arrested on a minor traffic stop. Sally O'Brien has the following story.
On May 30th, Jadat Abu Azza was pulled over for an expired inspection sticker. When Cambridge police saw flyers in the car, they arrested him and took him into custody. The following day, his hearing was delayed, so he had to spend the weekend in jail. Over the weekend, FBI agents interrogated Abu Azza 7 times, and by Monday morning, the Immigration and Naturalization Service had issued a detainer, preventing him release on bail. Within a day, the INS picked Abu Azza up, saying he had entered the country surreptitiously. This despite the fact that the Canadian citizen had simply gotten on a bus, as is normal for any Canadian citizen to do. According to attorneys and supporters, since his detention by INS, Abu Azza has been subject to brutality and torture, including the forced extraction of 4 teeth, in a procedure so violent that a 5th molar was also cracked and remains in his mouth, cutting into his gum and causing continual pain. In addition, say the attorneys, the young man has been repeatedly beaten and thrown into solitary confinement. Despite continued interrogation, Abu Azza has refused to provide information on his political activities in support of Palestinian rights or the groups and organizations involved in these efforts. Addressing a demonstration in Washington, D.C., June 29th, Amir Gibran of the Jadat Abu Azza Defense Committee spoke about the case.
Free Jadat now! Free Jadat now! For those who don't know who is Jadat, Jadat is the absolute story of horror that we have brought right here in D.C. to tell of profiling and discriminating and torturing Arabs for the simple fact that they are Arabs. Jadat Abu Azza is a young Palestinian man who is an activist in the Boston area. He was pulled over for a traffic violation. 4 hours later, he found himself interrogated by the FBI and asked questions if he is suicidal, if he is ready to blow up himself, if he knows Osama bin Laden, if he's affiliated with any organizations that intend to inflict terrorism on this country. Jawdat Abu Izza was denied his due process. And 2 weeks after, with the pressure by us in the streets to bring justice to Jawdat, found himself strapped to a dentist's chair where by force they have extracted 4 of his molars. Without consent, without any justification that they can bring to our attention other than the fact that he is being punished for having flyers in his trunk that called to protest the U.S. and Israeli policies. We cannot allow them to run their policies that every Arab is charged with terrorism until proven innocent. It should go the other way around. So shame on them for coming and to use us as an scapegoat for all of their security and economic problems. Whenever they have a dispute, they found an Arab to use him as an scapegoat for solving the problems. Well, that is not going to be allowed, because today the attack on the Arabs is tomorrow attack on every single person who is going to oppose anything that the U.S. government is going. Free Jawdat now!
Free Jawdat!
Free Jawdat!
Organized resistance makes a difference. Since we did this story, due to the strong support, hundreds of letters and calls, and the many people who turned out at court appearances, Jawdat Abu Azza is now free in Canada after 41 days of illegal detention. Jawdat's arrest, interrogation, and torture is a fate shared with many hundreds of other Arab and Muslim and South Asian detainees who also need support. Stop the racist repression. Release the detainees.
On July 4th, several hundred people braved the blazing heat and hit the streets of Philadelphia in a spirited rally calling for the release of death row journalist, former Black Panther and MUF supporter, Mumia Abu-Jamal. At the same time, Secretary of State General Colin Powell prepared to receive that city's Liberty Award. It was over the 4th of July weekend, 20 years ago, that a jury sentenced the young journalist to death after only a few hours of deliberation.
Today marks 20 years since this government fought that they can sentence Mumia to death on the 3rd of July and on the 4th come back here and party.
For 2 decades, Abu-Jamal and his supporters worldwide have called for a new trial. Now, in the face of new evidence and the documented bias on the part of the original trial judge, supporters say it's time to set him free.
Here we are in Philadelphia on July 4th. We're here with Sam Jordan, attorney Sam Jordan of the International Concerned Family and Friends of Mumia Abu-Jamal. And Sam, I know there's a lot going on legally with Mumia, but particularly onus is the role that Judge Castile of the Pennsylvania Supreme Court is playing.
A question hanging over this country on this day, July 4th, is the criminal justice system in the United States capable of giving justice to anyone, but particularly sons and daughters of Africa?
And particularly, of course, right here we're talking about the case of Mumia Abu-Jamal.
Mumia Abu-Jamal's case is representative of so many. There are 2 million people in jail in the United States. 2 million people means that 1 out of every 4 people incarcerated in the world is incarcerated in the United States. And at least 250,000 of them, like Mumia, have been wrongfully convicted. And part of this wrongful conviction with Mumia's case rests and revolves around Ronald Castile. Ronald Castile was DA, district attorney, in Philadelphia. As DA, his name appeared on a training tape. A training tape that was produced in his office by another DA, Jack McMahon. These are called the McMahon tapes. These tapes are instructional tapes in the ways to exclude blacks from the jury pool. Our DA, Castile, also practiced the systematic discriminatory removal of black jurors from the jury pool. Well, for a short time, Mumia acted as his own attorney. The judge removed the one black juror that Mumia was able to seat while acting as his own attorney and replaced her with an alternate juror who said, "I cannot resolve my prejudice against the defendant." He said this in open court. "I cannot resolve my prejudice against the defendant." And that juror, that alternate juror, was seated in the place of the African-American female juror who was removed. He became the jury foreman, still as a DA, in this period where these DAs learned this trick, was appointed to the Pennsylvania Supreme Court bench. He's there now. When the legal team brought this appeal in this habeas corpus, in the Post-Conviction Relief Act appeal, one of the issues that was addressed was the racist selection of the mayor's jury. Ronald Castile heard that appeal when he should have recused himself. Ronald Castile is at the heart of the complete discredit of the Pennsylvania Supreme Court.
And of course, Sam Jordan, 6 months ago, the courts ruled that Mumia's sentence should be vacated and changed to, commuted to life in prison if there isn't a new sentencing hearing in 180 days, which is this month. What's happening with that?
Well, that 180 days has passed. That order from Judge William Yon, sitting in the Federal District Court, December 18th, 180 days should have been June 18th at the latest. The state insisted that it will appeal and that there will be no resentencing hearing anytime soon. So that date has been suspended. But this is in the manner of a deal being made by Judge Yon with the state. This is what Yon is telling the state. If you actually held a resentencing hearing and gave Mumia Abu-Jamal and his attorneys a chance to bring to a jury the evidence that Mumia Abu-Jamal would more than likely be set free.
And where are we right now?
Right now, Mumia is still on death row. The state is appealing the judge's decision. Mumia still stands the threat of execution. But we are hopeful that the people's movement, which has made the difference in this case, continues to get the truth out to the country, to the rest of the world, that the United States criminal justice system is rotten to its core, and Mumia's case must be thrown out. Mumia himself must be released.
People recognize their power, the power to say no, the power to say enough, the power to say, well, damn it, let's get together and change this thing. And anything is possible.
Hey! Oh, oh! This police boy has got to go! Hey, hey! Oh, oh! This police boy has got to go!
Activist News is produced by the Activist Information Collective. It's brought to you by People's Video Network, Free the Media, WBIX.org, Refugees in Exile Internet Radio, Manhattan Neighborhood Network, DCTV, WBAI 99.5 FM Radio. We welcome your comments. You can email us at info@activistnews.org. Thank you for being with us. I'm Judy Cheng.